Welcome to the deep dive. Today we are taking what I think is a really essential shortcut through the just the dense landscape of the technology and telecommunications industries.
It's a complicated space.
It is. And if you work in it, or well, if you rely on it, which is pretty much everyone at this point, you know the headlines are just, they're full of buzzwords. AI, 5G, now 6G.
Right.
But our mission today is to cut through all of that noise and deliver the cold, hard reality. And we're doing it based on some extremely rigorous analysis.
And our guide for this deep dive is the, let's say, very short perspective of Andover Intel.
Yeah.
Specifically, we're looking at insights from their principal analyst, Tom Knoll.
And what makes this source material so valuable? Why this perspective?
Well, it's their methodology.
Yeah.
What makes them so often critical is that they are fundamentally skeptical of vendor claims of marketing hype. Their whole view is grounded in what they learn from their, they call it a user contact program.
Okay, so they're talking to the people actually buying the tech.
Exactly. It's all about understanding what tech buyers are actually doing, what they're expecting to get, and maybe most importantly, what they're justifying in their budgets.
I see. So it's an approach that's designed to challenge the hype cycles.
It deliberately challenges them. Yes.
So we're not here to talk about, you know, theoretical speeds or tests they did in a lab somewhere. We are diving into the structural crises, the profit models that are literally collapsing, and some really unexpected shifts in buyer psychology that are, well, resetting the entire tech map right now.
And the core truth we're trying to extract here is this. Before any new technology can really succeed, there are these fundamental, decades-old economic problems that have to be solved first.
And if the tech can't solve the profit problem,
then in the eyes of this analysis, it's just hype. It's that simple.
So our focus today is on three massive, and they're all interconnected, trends. First, this profound economic crisis facing the major carriers. Second, the harsh reality check that we all need when we're talking about the benefits of AI and 5G.
A much-needed reality check.
And finally, some truly critical, maybe non-obvious, shifts in how the market behaves. Okay, let's unpack this. Starting with the stark realities facing the carriers, which leads us directly into section one, the structural crisis in telecommunications.
And I think we have to begin with the most concrete, just undeniable evidence of a systemic failure. And that evidence comes directly from one of the largest communication companies in the world.
We're talking about Verizon.
We are.
They announced plans to lay off 15,000 workers.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at their overall employee numbers, that's roughly 15% of their entire workforce.
It's a staggering number.
It's huge. This isn't just, you know, trimming the fat or some minor efficiency gain. This is a radical surgical strike on their personnel.
And it points to enormous internal financial pressure.
Absolutely.
And the analysis is clear on this. While, yes, this specific decision was made under Verizon's new CEO, the problem itself is not isolated to Verizon's boardroom.
So this isn't a Verizon problem.
Not at all.
Yeah.
The factors driving this decision. You've got slow revenue growth, massive capital expenditure that just hasn't yielded enough return, and this underlying structural flaw. Those are shared across most of the telco world.
It's an industry-wide siren then.
It really is. It's proving that the economic model is, well, fundamentally broken.
It seems almost unbelievable, though. I mean, a service as essential as connectivity, it's the absolute lifeblood of the modern economy. How can that business be in crisis?
Well, that crisis, as you mentioned, it boils down to a single deep-seated structural issue. The analysis calls it the telco's historical fear.
Disintermediation.
Disintermediation. That's the core concept we really need to grasp here, because it is the fundamental trap that prevents telcos from generating sustainable, revolutionary profit.
No matter how fast their network gets.
Doesn't matter. Think of it this way. Telcos invest tens, sometimes hundreds of billions of dollars in infrastructure. We're talking the physical fiber, the radio towers, the complex switching gear.
All the expensive stuff.
All the really expensive stuff. And this infrastructure provides what are essentially low revenue, high cost pipes.
Okay.
Disintermediation happens when other companies, often smaller, more agile companies, build these immensely valuable, highly profitable services on top of those pipes.
So the telco is selling the raw material, the bandwidth, at what is basically a commodity price.
Pretty much.
And then some third-party company comes along, sells a finished high-margin product built using that material, and they're the ones who capture almost all the value.
Exactly. The perfect analogy. You know, look back at early mobile data. The carriers provided the expensive 3G or 4G connectivity.
Right.
But then companies like WhatsApp or Facebook built these communication and social apps that use that bandwidth.
Yeah.
And in doing so, they bypassed the carrier's own services, like SMS or calling, which used to be huge profit centers for them.
And the carriers were just left holding the bag.
They were left running the high-cost network while getting paid a commodity rate for the data that an application was using to generate billions in value for someone else.
That is a very clear explanation of the financial trap they're in. They spend the most, provide the basic service, and then someone else reaps all the rewards.
And according to this analysis, this structural issue is so profound that there are only two, let's call them theoretical, necessary solutions to really address it and, you know, save the industry.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first is for the telco to find a way to gain a major profit share from those profitable third-party services. Basically demanding a much higher toll for using their roads.
And the second solution?
The second one is much more radical and a lot more difficult. The telco has to aggressively build those profitable services themselves.
They have to move up the value stack.
Precisely. They have to become the application provider, the platform owner, the solution architect, not just the network provider.
We've seen them try both over the years, right?
Yeah.
Often failing spectacularly.
Which just underscores how complex this dilemma is.
So the 15,000 Verizon layoffs we're seeing today are happening because of investment decisions that failed to address these two solutions 10 or even 15 years ago.
That's the long-term view, yes.
But that brings us to the present. I mean, if these structural problems are so deep, why is the industry still so passionately debating new tech options, you know, like 5G features or AI, as if there's some kind of simple, guaranteed silver bullet?
And this is where the source applies its most potent dose of skepticism.
Okay.
The argument is this. If a real, viable, revolutionary tech opportunity existed, I mean, something like true high-value AI integration or the advanced features of 5G like network slicing, if it were genuinely capable of solving this crisis and generating revolutionary demonstrable profits,
then the evidence would be overwhelming.
It would be. All the internal debate would just cease immediately.
The source has a great line for this. It would shout out its effectiveness.
Precisely. The observation is that the continued fervent, often defensive debate among the operators and the vendors, that debate itself is the proof.
The proof that it's not working.
It suggests that these new technologies have not yet shouted out their effectiveness clearly enough to fundamentally change the profit structure. I mean, think about it. If 5G slicing could guarantee a 20% margin on a new enterprise service, or if AI could slash operational costs by 30% tomorrow,
carriers wouldn't be debating. They'd be executing at warp speed.
And they'd be hiring more deployment specialists, not handing out layoff notices to 15% of their staff.
I see the logic, but I have to challenge that premise a little bit. Couldn't it just be a matter of timing? You know, tech adoption often follows an S-curve. Maybe we're just past the initial hype and we're still waiting for the real monetization phase to kick in. Isn't it a bit cynical to say that the existence of a debate means the tech is flawed?
That is a fair counterpoint, and it's one the analysis implicitly addresses by looking at the historical cycles.
Okay.
While timing is always a factor, the source argues that for a technology to solve an existential financial crisis, its value has to be immediate and overriding.
It can't be a slow burn.
Exactly. When the potential returns of a new generation, let's say 5G, are less than the cost of deploying it, the debate continues. When the potential returns are clearly greater than the cost, the debate stops and the money just floods in.
And we're not seeing the money flood in.
In fact, the opposite. The fact that operator CapEx, their capital expenditure, is actually slowing down even for 5G, it validates the source's skepticism. The returns just aren't there to justify the spending.
Which leads us directly into section two, the reality check on AI and 5G hype.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with 5G. I mean, we've been hearing about its transformative power for years, but this analysis points to a distinct recent trend of diminishing opportunity. What specifically is signaling that 5G is failing to live up to its economic promise?
The concern isn't theoretical at all. It's palpable and it's very recent. Over just the last 6 months, operators have explicitly told vendors about their deep concern over the diminishing 5G opportunity.
So the customers are telling their suppliers this isn't working out.
They are. They deploy the infrastructure for speed and bandwidth, the basic stuff, but they haven't been able to monetize the most complex, high-value features.
And you mean features like network slicing, right? That was supposed to be the big one.
Exactly. Network slicing was pitched as the key monetization mechanism, this idea that you could carve out a guaranteed ultra-low latency, high-security portion of the network for an enterprise client.
Allowing the carrier to sell a premium service for, say, industrial automation or remote surgery.
Right. But the problem is, actually implementing network slicing requires sophisticated software, new orchestration layers, and really complex integration with all their existing legacy systems.
It wasn't plug and play.
Not even close. It turned out to be far more expensive, complex, and time-consuming to deliver these promised services than anyone projected. And that pushed the cost of that second solution building the profitable service beyond what the market was willing to bear.
So 5G is sinking as a driver, not because the technology is slow, but because the path to profitably implementing its most valuable features is just too rocky.
That's the core of it. Yeah. And this is having a downstream effect on the entire ecosystem.
The vendors must be feeling it.
Oh, absolutely. The network vendors are equally concerned about the state of operator spending. They're seeing their sales pipeline shrink, and they're noting that 5G is sinking as a driver for new investment and upgrades.
It's a vicious cycle.
It is. If the customers, the carriers, don't see a clear path to generating profit on their massive initial 5G CapEx, they're not going to invest further in the feature sets that enable that higher value. It's a cycle of non-monetization.
Okay, so if 5G isn't delivering, the industry has pivoted hard. The new magic word is AI. It's the defining buzzword of the decade.
Without a doubt.
And companies everywhere are claiming AI is responsible for their good news. We have to scrutinize this, and the Cisco example is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Cisco recently reported strong quarterly earnings, and they attributed a portion of that success to AI-driven network traffic and updates. That sounds like concrete evidence of AI generating value, doesn't it?
It does sound like a win, and that's precisely why the source immediately applies skepticism. The analysis questions whether this is a genuine AI-driven benefit that helps solve the profit problem, or if it's just AI washing.
AI washing. So attributing routine infrastructure needs to the popular trend.
That's the idea.
But wait a minute. If AI tools generate massive data demands, I mean, for model training or data transfer between GPUs, that traffic has to go somewhere. Doesn't that necessarily drive demand for better, faster Cisco equipment?
It absolutely drives traffic, and therefore it drives demand for equipment. No question.
So what's the issue?
The crucial distinction the source insists on making is this. Does the AI activity generate enough net new revenue for the carrier to solve the disintermediation crisis? Or is it just driving massive CapEx for the network vendors?
Ah, I see. It's a different question.
It is. The current traffic growth might simply be accelerating hardware upgrades that were already going to be necessary due to routine data growth. And now they're just conveniently rebranded with an AI label. The skepticism asks, is AI truly accelerating the purchase decision, or is it just the label on the purchase order?
So until we see carrier profitability actually surge because of some AI-enabled high-margin service, the source remains dubious.
Exactly. That reframing is essential. The source wants to see the value translate directly to the bottom line for the service provider, not just to the sales statistics for a network vendor.
And the broader market seems to justify that critical viewpoint when you look at the mixed signals coming from major tech earnings.
This is a fascinating data point. It really underscores the market uncertainty. You just have to consider that one earnings week where Google, Meta, and Microsoft, three colossal firms, all heavily invested in AI, all reported on the same Wednesday.
Logically, if AI were a universal tide lifting all boats, they should all have performed well, or at least consistently.
You'd think so, but the results were far from uniform.
Right.
Only Google saw a really positive market reaction. Its stock held steady, even rose. Microsoft's reaction was mixed, but generally positive, mostly attributed to their enterprise cloud strength.
But Meta?
Meta fared the worst of the three. They saw a distinct dip in market confidence despite their massive investment in AI and, specifically, the metaverse.
So why did Meta fare the worst? What does that tell us about how the market sees the value of AI?
It implies that the market is differentiating between productive AI investment and, well, speculative AI investment.
Okay.
Google's AI success is tightly integrated into its core, highly profitable businesses, search, advertising optimization, cloud services. The market sees that spending is directly reinforcing existing revenue streams. It makes sense.
Where's Meta?
Meta has poured billions into speculative ventures like Reality Labs and the Metaverse, which the market views as extremely high risk with very low near-term return.
So the stock market is punishing the spending when the monetization path isn't immediately clear. It's not a broad uncertainty about AI, but uncertainty around the application of AI and the justification for the massive CapEx.
That's precisely right. And this pattern suggests that AI uncertainty is completely justified because the market is demanding clarity on monetization before it will reward the investment.
Which validates the whole critical approach of Andover Intel.
It does. If even the biggest tech firms can't uniformly translate AI investment into clear market value, the smaller, financially distressed carriers should be highly skeptical of AI as some kind of standalone revenue solution.
The market isn't rewarding investment, it's rewarding perceived successful, disciplined monetization. So if 5G is diminishing as a driver and AI's value is uncertain, what does the industry do?
Well, it does what it always does.
It pivots to the next source of hype.
The cycle continues, and it's so predictable. The same two groups, the operators worried about 5G returns and the vendors worried about a lack of spending, are now, quote, working hard to believe that 6G will solve all problems.
It's almost comedic if it weren't so financially serious. It's this constant technological leapfrogging, just hoping that more speed and more bandwidth will miraculously fix the systemic economic issue of disintermediation.
The analysis characterizes this as a predictable, repeating cycle of hype. I mean, I remember the early 2000s when WAPI phones were hailed as the future of mobile content.
Oh, I remember that.
The underlying infrastructure, early 3G, was promised to be revolutionary, but the applications and the profit model were unusable or they were non-existent.
So the industry just jumped to the next generation.
And then the next, without ever solving that content and profit split, this is 5G and 6G just repeating that same pattern. Until the carrier solves how to capture the value of the application layer, jumping to 6G will just mean deploying a new, even more expensive pipe for third parties to profit from.
And for you, the listener, the key insight here is that the technology roadmap has to be secondary to the revenue roadmap.
Right. No amount of spectral efficiency can fix a fundamentally broken business model. You need a solution to disintermediation, not just a faster connection.
Okay, so if the carriers are struggling this much, let's pivot away from their internal problems for a moment and look at the customer side. How is buyer behavior accelerating this structural crisis? That brings us to section three, changing market dynamics and buyer psychology. And the decline of the cable industry here acts as this massive flashing warning sign for both telcos and enterprises.
Yeah, the source poses the fundamental question: how have the mighty cablecos fallen? I mean, for years, cable companies had a near monopoly on high-speed internet.
Oh.
They controlled the most valuable content pipeline into the home.
They were the definition of an integrated, profitable service provider.
They were, and yet that dominance is just evaporating at an alarming rate.
And the data confirms this. It's a rapid decay. Let's look at the specific 3Q25 earnings reported by major players like Comcast and Charter.
The numbers are staggering. Comcast reported really significant losses. They lost over a quarter of a million video customers.
Okay, that part is expected. That's cord cutting.
Right. But critically, they also lost over 100,000 broadband customers. And Charter lost about 70,000 customers in that same quarter.
The loss of video subscribers, like you said, that's just the cord cutting trend continuing.
Yeah.
But the loss of broadband customers, that's the real canary in the coal mine, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Broadband is the core, high margin, sticky service that was supposed to keep the revenue flowing no matter what.
It is the ultimate measure of their infrastructure's value. When customers start walking away from fixed broadband, it signals intense competition and, more importantly, a perception that the pipe is becoming a commoditized utility.
And who's taking those customers?
Primarily, the fixed wireless access providers. And they're using the existing 4G and 5G networks of those same telcos we were just talking about.
So the telco's core asset, the wire into the home, is no longer sacred.
It's not. This phenomenon proves it. And that makes the telco's disintermediation problem infinitely more acute, because now the basic service itself is easily replaceable.
The customer is actively seeking value and alternative service models, forcing the entire communications ecosystem to confront this reality of commoditization.
Yes.
And this ties perfectly into the next major finding from Andover Intel, which highlights a massive philosophical and purchasing reversal, this trend against openness, or as the source calls it, contra aperturam.
This might be the single most counterintuitive and powerful insight in the material.
It feels that way.
For the last decade, the industry, especially the vendors and the standards bodies, has been pushing hard for openness. You hear about Open RAN, open source networking, multi-vendor environments.
And the promise was always flexibility, lower capital costs, and freedom from vendor lock-in.
That was the pitch. Yet the analysis notes that buyers are now less enthusiastic about openness.
That runs completely contrary to the popular narrative. Why is that happening?
Well, the source introduces this concept using the Latin phrase contra aperturam, literally, against openness. And I think they do that to underscore the profound nature of this shift in buyer sentiment.
Okay.
And the reason this insight holds so much weight is, again, because Andover Intel focuses on what buyers are actually justifying in their budgets, not what vendors are pitching.
And what they're justifying now are less flexible, more integrated, sometimes proprietary systems.
That's what the data shows.
Let's drill into the why of it. If openness promises cost savings, why would buyers be retreating from it?
It really comes down to the hidden costs and the complexity.
Uh-huh.
An open environment, particularly something like Open RAN, would you have to integrate components from 3, 4, maybe 5 different vendors?
A radio unit from one company, a distributed unit from another.
And the management software from a third. And while the CapEx for each individual component might be lower, the complexity of the integration, the testing, the security auditing, and the ongoing maintenance, the operational expenditure, or OpEx, it just skyrockets.
So buyers are realizing that they simply traded a high CapEx for an unsustainable high OpEx headache.
That's exactly it. The integration burden lands squarely on the shoulders of the operator. And if there's a security vulnerability or a performance issue, troubleshooting becomes a nightmare in a multi-vendor environment.
You just have vendors pointing fingers at each other.
Right. Buyers need reliability and guaranteed performance for mission-critical services, especially in the enterprise space. And they're finding that the integrated, vertically controlled solutions, the traditional proprietary stacks, they simply offer a superior, lower-risk path to reliable operations. The cost of complexity outweighs the benefit of choice.
That is a profound shift in market psychology. It means integration and security are now considered more valuable than flexibility and raw component price.
It's a huge shift.
So contra aperturam suggests that buyers are valuing the certainty of a guaranteed integrated solution that just works over the theoretical potential of an open ecosystem that requires this massive internal integration effort.
And this buyer behavior is already redefining the market. If buyers are retreating, vendors who continue to rely solely on the open narrative without solving the integration and complexity problem are going to find themselves increasingly marginalized.
It validates the entire buyer-centric methodology of the analysis.
It does.
Okay, so now we have the full picture. Existential economic distress, technology hype failing to deliver profit, and a radical shift in buyer expectations that favors integration and security over openness. So, where is the path forward?
A good question.
This brings us to section 4, strategic shifts and new frontiers. Let's start with strategic partnerships. We saw one announced between NVIDIA and Nokia. What could something like that actually achieve?
Well, first, we have to acknowledge the immediate skepticism. The analysis notes that many on Wall Street view these high-profile AI deals as merely cynical mechanisms to boost the companies in the near term.
Right. It's easy to announce a partnership, get a stock pop, but not deliver anything concrete. But let's assume they're pursuing real structural change. What is the real potential for industry-altering, real, tangible AI benefits that could actually help telcos win? And by win, I mean solve that disintermediation problem by moving up the value chain.
The potential is transformative, but only if they leverage AI to create high-value specialized services. For Nokia, partnering with NVIDIA allows them to inject GPU processing power, which is the engine for advanced AI, directly into the network infrastructure.
And this isn't just about faster networks.
No, it's about enabling new premium capabilities. We're talking about AI being used for proactive network maintenance, predicting failures before they happen, or automating highly specialized network slices for specific customers.
So the partnership could satisfy that second solution to disintermediation, building the profitable services themselves.
How so?
By creating a platform that integrates the network from Nokia with the processing power from NVIDIA to sell mission-critical, high-margin AI-enabled operations management rather than just selling equipment or commodity bandwidth.
Precisely. If they can sell something like zero downtime network as a service powered by AI, they solve the problem. They have to move beyond generic traffic management and into selling outcomes.
And that idea of building high-value specialized services leads us to a specific concept, a new revenue model proposed by AT&T, the concept of facilitating services.
This is where the analysis shows some real hope for the carrier space. The source states they've been a theoretical fan of the idea of facilitating services ever since AT&T first started talking about it.
And the concept is applauded because...
Why? because it focuses on using the telco's unique, non-commoditizable capabilities to enable complex enterprise applications.
Okay, what are those unique capabilities? Are we talking about real-time location data, guaranteed low latency in a specific geographic area, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. The unique assets are network intelligence, coverage, and control. A facilitating service uses these assets like, say, geofencing, or providing ultra-reliable private 5G connectivity for a factory, and it layers that on top of the basic pipe to enable a third-party application.
And the carrier gets paid a premium for that enablement.
Right. They capture value before the disintermediation can even happen.
It sounds like the perfect theoretical solution, but the theory hasn't quite matched the market reality yet.
That's correct. The analysis notes that while the idea is brilliant, the source has not been enamored of the specific services they've elected to offer.
Which suggests AT&T's initial attempts at commercializing these were either too generic, too slow, or didn't target a vertical where buyers would pay the premium.
Oh, it seems to be an execution challenge, not a theoretical one.
But the underlying opportunity remains massive despite those initial stumbles.
The source is firm on this point. Telcos in general have a real opportunity in this space. They own the ground truth of connectivity. No cloud provider can replicate the level of localized, guaranteed performance that a telco can offer.
The challenge is finding the right killer application, the high-value vertical that absolutely demands the telco's unique capabilities.
That's it.
So, if the generic concept of facilitating services is the right strategic direction, what specific frontier should telcos be targeting for maximum opportunity, according to this analysis?
The suggestion is definitive. It says that facilitating services for digital twins should be the next telco frontier.
That is extremely specific. Let's really delve into why digital twins are the natural fit to finally solve this disintermediation problem.
Okay, so think about the technical demands of a true digital twin, especially in an industrial setting. We're talking a virtual replica of an operational oil refinery, or a manufacturing assembly line, or an entire city's power grid.
These are real-time systems.
They operate in real time, and they often involve control loops, where the physical world is instantly updated based on simulations and analysis running in the digital realm.
That sounds like a connectivity nightmare for a standard network.
It requires extreme network capability. First, it requires massive continuous connectivity to feed petabytes of real-time tensor data from thousands of endpoints into the digital replica.
Okay, so that's bandwidth.
Right. But second, and most critically, it requires ultra-low latency. We're talking below 10 milliseconds for industrial control loop optimization. If the network delay is too high, the physical and the digital twins diverge, and the whole system fails.
And that latency mandate, that requires localized network slicing and specialized management, maybe edge computing resources that are physically close to the operation.
Exactly.
And these capabilities, guaranteed, low latency, geographically precise network segmentation and edge compute, those are proprietary to the carrier. That's why the carrier is uniquely positioned to capture the value.
Precisely. If a telco provides a facilitating service that guarantees the 10 millisecond latency and the security segmentation required for the digital twin to function, and they charge a premium for that guarantee, they move from selling a low-margin commodity pipe to selling mission-critical enablement for a multi-million dollar industrial system.
They're finally capturing high profit value. They're solving the disintermediation crisis by building the valuable service layer themselves.
It leverages the unique physical assets of the carrier to enable a highly sophisticated, high-margin enterprise application.
This whole deep dive has painted a really clear picture. It's a telecom industry facing immense stress, existential threats, but also it's standing on the verge of specialized, profitable opportunities if they are willing to take the right risks on new service models.
I think to summarize the key takeaways for you listening, first, you have to internalize the deep structural profit issue facing carriers, this inability to overcome disintermediation. That is the root cause of all the financial distress.
Right.
Second, maintain a rigorous critical skepticism about the current benefits of AI and 5G. The market signals are clear. The hype has not yet translated into the kind of revolutionary profit that justifies massive capex.
Third, recognize the rapid decline of traditional cable and video revenue. That's a stark warning to the entire communications ecosystem about how fast commoditization can happen.
Fine.
Look for the pivot to specialized high-value services. These facilitating services, with digital twins being identified as the specific high-potential frontier that naturally requires the unique network capabilities of the carriers.
And I think understanding these dynamics means you're looking past the marketing slogans and directly at the balance sheet.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's circle back to that idea of contra aperturam, the silent buyer-driven retreat from openness that we talked about. If understanding technology requires understanding what buyers are justifying in their budgets, and those buyers are prioritizing certainty and integration, what are the broader ramifications for future network standards?
Well, if that trend holds, the complexity of managing a multi-vendor Open RAN stack, for example, it just becomes untenable for most operators.
Exactly. So, how fast will this silent buyer-driven shift away from openness redefine networking standards and investment priorities over the next few years? I mean, will we see major enterprise standards bodies quietly roll back their support for these deeply open, heterogeneous environments?
Or will the market just force vendors to bundle open components into proprietary, fully integrated solutions just to meet that buyer demand for certainty?
That's something for you to mull over as you apply this new skeptical knowledge.
The cost of failure outweighs the cost savings of openness. I think that's the critical defining realization for the market right now.
Absolutely. That's all for this deep dive.